It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. So now the primaries are over and outside groups are running ads for Scott Walker and Tony Evers. Who is running these ads? And do they still make a difference to voters? What's your reaction to the money that's poured into the race for governor since the primary? Have you been following ads released by outside PACs? What is your take on them? 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@WPR.org, or you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. We're joined this morning by Molly Beck and Patrick Marley. They cover politics and state government for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Welcome back, Molly.
Thanks for having me. Good morning.
And Patrick, welcome back to the show yourself.
Yeah, thanks for having me on.
Patrick, we're going to be starting with you here. When we say money is pouring in, the questions that come up are from whom and to what? So let's distinguish between PAC money and direct candidate campaign donations.
Sure. There's a lot of ways to influence campaigns in Wisconsin without giving money to a candidate. The best way to do that is to run television ads of your own. So that's what a lot of these groups are doing. In Wisconsin, you can, you know, we've had recent campaign finance law changes that allow more coordination between candidates and outside groups. So we don't always know to what extent they may or may not be talking. But in some cases, it's very close working together. For instance, the state Republican Party is running ads that are slashing Tony Evers. That's being done in cooperation with the governor's campaign. The party is sort of acting as the attack apparatus of the governor's campaign. Similarly, a group called the Stronger Wisconsin, which is a new group but is funded by the Democratic Governors Association, a national group that has been involved in past elections, is doing similar things for Tony Evers. So they're running ads that are sort of helping tell voters who Tony Evers is and positive things about him, and also going on the attack against Walker.
Okay, so let me get this clear here. There have been campaign finance laws that have changed since Citizens United that make it easier now for outside PACs to coordinate with a candidate?
Yeah, so Citizens United was, the U.S. Supreme Court decision that said unions and corporations can spend unlimited sums in elections. In Wisconsin, there was a state law change in recent years. This was in reaction to the John Doe 2 investigation that said there can be coordination between campaigns and these third-party groups. So that's the case in Wisconsin. It would differ in other states. There can be clearer boundaries as to what kind of conversations can happen between campaigns and third-party groups.
And so we have Republicans supporting Scott Walker. We have Democrats supporting Tony Evers. And are there disclosure requirements here, or can somebody who we don't know who it is just give a lot of or start running ads, not give money directly to campaign, but start running ads as part of a super PAC to support either one of these guys?
There's lots of ways to put money into elections without having the sort of source of the money known. The groups that run television ads, you can find out from the television stations how much of their money is going on the ad. So, for instance, you know that A Stronger Wisconsin, which is the Democratic Governors Association, is putting this money into these elections, but you might not know who precisely is getting the money for those ads to that group. Or Wisconsin Manufacturers and Commerce, the state's business lobbying group, is running ads to help Walker. Again, you know that WMC is spending the money. You don't know which businesses or individuals gave money to WMC to put those ads on the air.
We are talking about the money that is pouring into the governor's race here in Wisconsin with Patrick Marley and Molly Beck of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Molly, the Koch brothers, Americans for Prosperity, dropped $1.8 million for Governor Walker. This is also outside PAC money. Meanwhile, the Greater Wisconsin Committee is running about $400,000 worth of ads for Tony Evers. What are these ads saying? What's the spin here?
So the AFP ad, that is an ad that praises Walker for his spending on schools and kind of blasts Tony Evers for for praising Governor Walker on his education plan. And the point of that ad is to kind of tear down the education edge, you could say, that Tony Evers has in being state superintendent. Governor Walker earlier this year dubbed himself the education governor, and in his last budget, he proposed and got passed a huge increase for public school spending. So he's trying to make the case that he is an education-friendly governor in a way to kind of, you know, mute the effect that Tony Evers might have in the race. And the Prayer Wisconsin Committee, that ad is accusing Governor Walker about, they say he's lying about Tony Evers and Tony Evers' record on whether or not he has worked forcefully enough to revoke the licenses of teachers who have, in some cases, looked at pornography during school and other kinds of sexual-related misconduct. That's been the central attack from the Republican side, is that he has not, revoked licenses in cases of very serious sexual misconduct involving teachers.
We're going to play those ads. First, we're going to play the ad from Americans for Prosperity.
Thanks to his pro-growth policies, Governor Walker has invested millions in our schools and received a lot of praise. A pro-kid budget, an important step forward. Commitment to K-12 education is good news. So, who said those things? Tony Evers. But now that Evers is running for office, he's trying to take back his praise. The truth? Governor Scott Walker is improving Wisconsin education, and Tony Evers knows it.
We also have an ad paid for by the Greater Wisconsin Committee, which is a response to the Republican Party that criticizes Evers for not revoking a teacher's license, which you were just talking about a second ago, Molly.
Parents and school officials asked Superintendent Tony Evers to revoke the license of teachers who preyed on our kids. One teacher viewed and shared pornographic images at school. Another used Snapchat to ask her student to have sex in a storage closet. Yet another teacher was caught with his pants down in the classroom. State Superintendent Tony Evers had the power to revoke their licenses, but he refused, leaving our kids unprotected.
Okay, so I'm really confused about that. Did we play the right clip? Was that three? We played three. I wanted to play four. Can we play four? That's a response to that? Okay, so we don't seem to have that loaded up here. We played two ads that were attacking Tony Evers there. The Koch brothers run Americans for Prosperity, Patrick. Who is giving the money? Who is running or funding a Greater Wisconsin Committee that is supporting Tony Evers?
So the Greater Wisconsin Committee is a group that's been around for 10, 12, 15 years. Wisconsin-based, runs ads to help Democrats. They helped Jim Doyle a lot. They've helped liberal candidates for the state Supreme Court. We don't know a lot about their funding because much of their spending they do through a group that does not need to disclose. They do some – actually, I think these ads – we haven't seen the disclosure yet, but I believe these ads are express advocacy, so they will be disclosed. So we might find out a little bit more there. In the past, they've gotten some support from unions and other traditional supporters of Democrats. I would imagine they've had to shift some of their support or broaden their support because of the hit that the unions have taken in recent years in Wisconsin.
We are trying to sort out the ads we have here. We're going to play an ad from a Stronger Wisconsin, which is a group affiliated with the... Okay, we're going to take a break right now. We are talking to Molly Beck and Patrick Marley, who cover politics and state government for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. It's the morning show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. We're talking about money coming into the governor's race in Wisconsin on today's State Capitol Report. Democrat Tony Evers and Republican Scott Walker have seen money coming directly to their campaigns, and we've been seeing ads run by political action committees in the last couple of weeks. How do you feel about the tone of the gubernatorial campaign? Is it too negative, or is this business as usual? Are you feeling the race for governor is going about what you thought it would be? 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org is where you can email us, or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. So we're talking to Molly Beck and Patrick Molly, and they cover state politics and state government from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. We were playing some clips before. We got them a little mixed up. We're going to be playing right now two clips that support Tony Evers. The first one is from A Stronger Wisconsin, which, as you mentioned, Patrick, is a group affiliated with the Democratic Governors Association.
You know what? You don't just wake up one day to 31,000 miles of broken roads or a teacher shortage so bad they call it historic. And healthcare costs, they've been going up for years. Fixing things like this is a governor's job. But while Scott Walker's had plenty of time for politics, he's let our roads, schools, and healthcare fall apart for 8 long years. And you can be sure he's not changing now.
And the next ad we're going to play is the Greater Wisconsin Committee, which is supporting Tony Evers also.
Would you trust a career politician or a lifelong educator? After 25 years in office, Scott Walker is desperate to stay in power. So he's attacking Tony Evers and not telling the truth. Tony Evers would never put our children at risk. When the law stopped Tony Evers from revoking a teacher's license for viewing pornography, Tony worked with lawmakers from both parties to change the law so offenders could be kicked out of the classroom. Tony Evers, putting our children's safety and the truth first.
So we heard, Molly, we heard those two ads, one saying, oh, my God, he lets teachers look at pornography from school. And another one saying, you know, he wanted to discipline this teacher. He wanted to fire this teacher. There was a law that said he couldn't. And so he had to figure out how to change the law in order to make this happen. Where's the truth here?
It's a complicated issue, and probably more than your listeners ever wanted to know about teacher licensure. But basically, the Governor Walker and the Republicans are saying that Tony Evers has had all these situations where teachers have, like in the case of a Middleton teacher that the ads are about, he looked at pornography at school. The district tried to fire him for many other reasons. They couldn't fire him. And Governor Walker is arguing that the state superintendent should have been able to come in and be like, hey, like what you did is inexcusable, and revoked his license. Tony Evers says that he did think what he did was inexcusable, but state law at the time of the incident said that kids had to be exposed to the material in order to revoke the license legally. And that is why right after that there was a law or a bill introduced that changed the definition in state law to what's called a moral conduct, which allows the state superintendent to revoke a license under. They just got rid of the part that said children had to be exposed to it, and it was in direct response to this case that all these ads are about.
And Tony Evers supported that law.
He did support that law, yes. So that's where the truth is. Both sides can say, you know, they're right in that situation. I think Tony Evers would say that they would have gone to court if he had revoked the license because the law was not on his side. Governor Walker is saying you should have tried anyway and let the courts sort it out.
We're talking about outside group spending, but candidates have been getting a lot of money directly to them. Patrick, Tony Evers has raised more than $1 million for his campaign since winning the Democratic nomination for governor about a week or so ago. Is there a sense that Democratic donors are lining up behind him?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think the fact that he was able to raise $1 million in 8 or 9 days does show that there's these sort of pent-up energy for Democratic donors. You have to remember, in the primary, you had 8 candidates, and so a lot of donors just sat on the sidelines. They didn't want to invest in a candidate. It was, unclear who was going to get through that. That's why this group, A Stronger Wisconsin, was set up, was that the Democrats were very aware that they had this vulnerability in getting a candidate through a primary who would then have no money, and that the governor or people on his side could spend a bunch of money attacking Evers, which is exactly what happened. They were learning from what happened in the Republican primary in 2012 when Tammy Baldwin was the nominee and the Republicans had a messy four-way primary. Tommy Thompson got the nomination, didn't have any money, and her side just pounded Thompson for weeks before he could get on the air and get sort of his version of events up. So Democrats wanted to prevent that. That's why they have this Stronger Wisconsin operation going, and that's, I think, why their fundraising is happening like it is. Now, I think it's important to remember that Scott Walker has got the distinct advantage here. I think he had $6 million in the bank at the end of June. He has been spending millions of dollars on ads since the spring. So he's far and away ahead in the fundraising game at this point.
We are talking to Molly Beck and Patrick Marley, covering state politics for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And we're taking your calls, 800-642-1234. Randy from Madison, welcome to the program.
Yes, good morning. I was wondering, it used to be quite a tradition that at least among Democrats, they would trek out to Hollywood and make the rounds of these house parties, and Rob Reiner and George Clooney, and pick up money there. I was wondering if that has been the situation, say, with the governor's candidates going into the primary, or the Republican Senate candidates, for that matter. It may be that Republicans do some of that, too, now. Are you aware of that, or are you aware if they will be doing it before the election?
Molly, you want to take that?
I haven't heard of the governor's candidates heading out to California to get support from, actors and actresses and directors. But I do know that Randy Bryce, the Democratic congressional candidate in the first, he has received a lot of attention from not just, the political elite, so to speak, but others too. But that's the only candidate that I know of in this race.
But in Wisconsin, I just learned that outside money, outside PAC money, can be coordinated with the candidate. Do either of you see Tony Evers coordinating specifically his campaign with outside PAC and what donors want? You want to take that, Patrick?
Sure. I think there's some level of coordination between Evers and this Stronger Wisconsin group that is part of the Democratic Governors Association. The Democratic Governors Association and the Republican Governors Association have both been involved in Wisconsin races in the past. Under the previous laws, those groups do multiple things, and so there were some things that were done in conjunction with the candidate and some things that were totally separated. I believe that there's less separation now because of those campaign finance law changes a couple of years ago.
So what are you guys watching as this race continues? We've got some ads that have been put out. Where do you think the advertising and the rhetoric is going to go from here? Molly, let's start with you.
I think we'll be watching for whether the Republicans and Governor Walker's side continue to hammer Tony Evers on the teacher licensure issue. We'll see if that narrative is going to affect him probably in the next polling that we see, round of polling. And if they change, they pick a different issue to hammer him on, it might be a signal that it wasn't as effective as they thought it might be.
Interesting. Patrick, what are your thoughts moving forward with this election?
I think one thing to watch closely is how much money from elsewhere starts coming in on the Democratic side. That would give us some sense of how winnable national Democrats think this race is. There seems to be a building sense among Democrats in Wisconsin, a building sense of optimism that they could beat Walker. I think it's a little less clear how folks on the national front are feeling. And one of the best ways to tell that is, you know, when they put money behind something, it means that they really do think they have a shot.
Money. We're talking. How much do you expect each candidate to get from outside PACs and directly to them? Really quickly, Patrick.
I don't know. I mean, you'll see over $10 million spent on each side easily, I would think.
Over $10 million. Molly Beck and Patrick Marley cover politics and state government for the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. Molly, thanks for being with us.
Thanks for having me.
And Patrick, thank you for being with us again.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.
It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. One of the issues likely to come up in the governor's race is Foxconn. The tech giant has pledged 13,000 jobs, but has recently said that it may not build the kind of factory it promised to build when it signed contracts with the state. So what happens if they don't create the amount of jobs pledged? And will all the workers come from Wisconsin? We're taking your calls on this one, 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Tweet us at WPR Mornings. Our guest today is, let's just say he's a little skeptical of Foxconn. Tim Bartik is a senior economist at the W.E. Upjohn Institute of Employment Research. It's a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Tim, welcome to the program.
Thanks for having me on.
So we know the Foxconn plant and its agreement are, in some people's words, historic. How far from typical is this?
It's really unusual. I mean, not just in the size of, in terms of dollars, but the amount per job. So it's about 10 times the usual deal in dollars of incentives per job. It's 10 times the usual deal in Wisconsin, 10 times the usual deal nationally. So the usual incentive deal in the U.S. is equivalent to roughly saying to a company, we'll subsidize 3% of your wages forever. This Foxconn deal is equivalent to saying we'll subsidize 30% of your wages forever.
Wow.
So it is very, very big. And one of the real issues is whether it sets a precedent. I mean, Wisconsin, you know, there's no way that Wisconsin can afford to offer this deal to every company in the state. You can't pay 30% of the wages of every company in the state. You can't even do it for every manufacturer or even every large manufacturer. And the same is true nationally. So one of the key issues is, there's a lot of pressure to kind of expand this thing. What does it mean in general for how the kind of economic development policy you have towards all businesses?
And Kimberly Clark is looking for some sort of economic incentive package also from the state. Are they likely to get one that is as generous as the Foxconn one?
Well, I mean, there's some pressure to do that. I mean, politically, it's very hard to see how you would go to one company and say, you get this deal, we'll give you 30% of your wages subsidized, and another company you don't. I mean, what's the difference exactly? I mean, if Foxconn were some unusual deal with terms of the multiplier effects or the wages paid or whatever, then you could justify it. But, you know, the estimates by the state's own consultants suggested the multiplier effects might be somewhere between 2 and 3, which means that for every job at Foxconn, there would be a total of 2 or 3 jobs, that is 1 or 2 additional jobs somewhere else in Wisconsin. So one job in Foxconn, 1 or 2 additional jobs somewhere in Wisconsin, that's 2 or 3 total jobs. That's not unusual for manufacturing plants. So mm-hmm. there's nothing about Foxconn that's particularly unusual about manufacturing plants. So how do you say to Foxconn, you get this deal, but you say to Kimberly Clark, you don't. You say to some company in Milwaukee, you don't. Green Bay, you go on and on and on. It politically, it's very difficult to say no. On the other hand, you can't afford to say yes.
So here's my question for you. There are people who say it's not just the jobs that Foxconn will be hiring. It's the fact that Foxconn is creating this area that other organizations, other businesses will come to, and then they will hire. That's what you're talking about with the multiplier effect. And what you're saying is, yeah, that may happen, but it's not going to happen any differently than any other manufacturing plant out there.
Right, as far as we know. I mean, now, you know, you can always hypothesize if someone comes along. I mean, at some point, if you think the multiplier is going to be 10 or 6 or 8, you know, maybe the deal is justified and maybe the separate treatment is justified. But I haven't seen any analysis that really presents a realistic case that for some magic reason, this is such a high tech, there's going to be such an incredible cluster of businesses created. Yes, there will be some multiplier effects. There always are. When you have a new manufacturing plant located that pays high wages, there are going to be suppliers to that plant. The workers are going to go out and buy things at grocery stores, restaurants, local retailers. Yes, there's a multiplier effect. Is it a miracle multiplier effect for Foxconn that's totally off the charts? No, probably not. There's been no evidence presented that it would be unusually high. As I said, the state's own consultant said the multiplier would be somewhere between 2 and 3.
We are talking right now about Foxconn. There's a promise of 13,000 jobs, and that Foxconn may or may not be able to make that, or may not be able to build the plant that it promised that it was going to plant. Tim Bartik is on the line with us. He is from the W.E. Upjohn Institute of Employment Research from Kalamazoo, Michigan. I should note that Tim mentioned that that we are subsidizing, the state is subsidizing 30% per job. Tim, I heard that the job, the average salary at Foxconn is going to be around $55,000. Is that true?
That's what the projections are. I don't know whether it's actually true. Those are the projections that the state presented.
If that were the case, the state would be $16,500 would be coming from the state for each of those jobs.
Yep, that's right.
So what do you think about Foxconn? Do you think $16,500 or more per job is something that we should be investing in? Do you think that the multiplier effect is, in fact, going to be higher than we're thinking it's going to be, and that the entire area is going to grow and that investment will pay off? 800-642-1234. You can also email us at ideas@wpr.org or tweet us at WPR Mornings. So let's talk about this announcement that Foxconn just made that they may not build the plant that they said they were going to make. What does that mean?
Well, I mean, the consequences, I think, to some extent depend on whether or not they cut back everything they do. The way the state structured the deal, half of the money is conditional on how many jobs is created. Half is conditional on how much capital investment is created.
Mm-hmm.
So if they cut the whole thing in half, that is half the capital investment, half the jobs, then the subsidy will be half as large. I mean, you know, really it's the same essential deal in terms of amount per job. However, if they decide to cut the jobs in half and they decide to keep the capital investment the same because they're going to put in a lot more robots or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
Then the subsidy would not be cut in half. The subsidy would be cut some because, as I said, half the subsidy, half the incentive depends upon the number of jobs. But since the other half depends on capital investment, the overall subsidy might be cut by a quarter. So the amount per job would actually go up if, in fact, the way in which the project is restructured is to kind of substitute capital investment for labor. So, the devil's in the details, as it usually is. It's possible the restructuring of the deal could lead to the cost per job being even higher than the $16,000 you already mentioned.
Yeah, but how do we know? I mean, all Foxconn said was we may not build according to the plan that we contracted with the state, but how do we know that they're going to, that they may go all robotic? How do we know when they're going to start building and make these plans public?
Well, I mean, as far as I know, I mean, there's no obligation for Foxconn needs to tell the state at various points how much capital investment it made and how many jobs it created. I don't know if Foxconn's under any obligation to the state to tell it in advance any of this stuff. Hopefully they're working in the spirit of cooperation and the state knows what to anticipate, and hopefully there's full information. And you know, ideally, I would think that the public and taxpayers and voters should know what is likely to arise from the deal. Is the cost per job likely to be higher than was originally projected or not? I mean, I think people should know that, ideally. But I don't know whether Foxconn is obliged to fully inform the state of all of its plans, or maybe their plans are changing all the time. I mean, they could be quite different 2 years from now than they are today.
We are talking about Foxconn and whether or not they are going to be creating the jobs they said they were going to be creating and how much it's going to cost the state. Taking your calls, Jeff from Green Bay. Welcome to the program, Jeff.
Hi, good morning. It is nice to hear the guests acknowledge that this is, it's a graduated and they only get the benefit that they earn. But I do believe that the comparison between Foxconn and KC is a little apples to oranges. Foxconn, it's a new manufacturing segment. It's tech. It's something that Wisconsin would like to bring in and see grow. KC is in paper. It's something that's, it's dying. It's been dying in Wisconsin. It's
interesting.
It's not something that we're going to see growing in Wisconsin. Foxconn is something we'd like to see growing in Wisconsin and everything that goes along to support it.
Interesting. Thank you for that, Jeff. So Kimberly Clark is old business. It's a business that is dying, Tim Bartik. And Foxconn represents where we're going in the future. What do you say to that?
Well, Foxconn, ultimately, it's a plant that's making flat-screen TV monitors. There's some technology involved in designing these things and in how you manufacture them. Whether it's the wave of the future, it's a piece of technology, involves some sophistication. As I said, I think there are some multiplier effects of it. Are they likely to be six? No, I think they're likely to be two or three, in which case it's frankly a little hard to see how the deal pays off at a multiplier of two or three. You need to reckon with that, yes, you bring in jobs, but the data suggests that for every 100 jobs you bring in, ultimately only 20 of them go to local residents, the other 80 go to in-migrants. So, you know, it raises, you know, when you hear about job creation, not all those jobs go to Wisconsin residents. In fact, about 20% do. And you also need to reckon with that, yes, it brings in a lot of new tax revenue, but those residents are going to expect for their kids to be educated. They're going to expect police and fire services. So your public service costs go up by close to the taxes.
So we're going to explore that in a moment. We are talking about Foxconn and what they are promising and whether those jobs will appear and who will be taking those jobs. 800-642-1234. Ideas at WPR.org, or you could tweet us at WPR Mornings. We're going to be back with Tim Bartik in a second. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Carrie Kaufman. Foxconn has recently announced that it has changed some of its plans, namely that they won't confirm that the building that they said they were going to build when they contracted with the state is what they will build. But leaders say they are still committed to a $10 million investment and 13,000 jobs. What are the other issues that are cropping up with this deal? We're taking your calls on this, 800-642-1234. You can email us at ideas@WPR.org, or WPR Mornings is our Twitter handle. Tim Bartik is a senior economist at the W.E. Upjohn Institute for Employment Research. This is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Tim, a moment ago, we were talking about how many jobs are going to go to Wisconsin residents. You threw out the number 20%. Is that realistic, that probably only 20% will go of the jobs will go to people who are currently in Wisconsin?
Well, yes, if you only trace down the whole chain of vacancies. So even if Wisconsin, you know, let's say that out of every 100 workers Foxconn hired, they hired 80 locally and 20 from outside. But the 80 locally, say most of them are already employed. That creates a job vacancy. And that job vacancy, in turn, needs to be filled either by a local resident who's not employed or someone else who's already employed or someone from out of state. So ultimately, when you create new jobs in a state, it either has to result in someone in the state who's not employed getting a job, or someone from outside the state moving in to take the job. The jobs that are filled by existing employed residents just create other vacancies, and so the vacancy chain ends up leading ultimately to either Wisconsin residents or out-of-state residents. Wisconsin residents otherwise would not be employed getting the jobs, or people from out-of-state. And so when people have looked at studies, it's pretty consistent. Job growth leads to population growth, and the relationship is roughly that, you know, 10% job growth leads to 8% population growth at the state level.
And when you have population growth, as you said, people expect things like education and police and fire and things like that. Oliver Wendell Holmes once very famously said, I like to pay taxes, with them I buy civilization. People don't necessarily like to pay taxes, but they want that civilization.
Right, and that needs to be accounted for. One of the problems, I think, with some of the fiscal analyses that have been done of the impact of Foxconn on the state budget is the current fiscal analyses that have been done by the state government assume that Foxconn and the multiplier jobs will just create tax revenue for the state. The assumption is that there will be zero public service cost in terms of hiring, you know, spending more money on K-12 or spending more money on universities or on local government assistance or revenue sharing. And the reality is, you know, unless you're assuming the quality of those services is going to deteriorate because you're going to, you know, you keep the same number of teachers, you have more students, you'd have higher class sizes. Mm-hmm. If you keep the same number of police and fire, you have more people, you have lower response times. You keep the same spending on roads, and you have more people, and you have more congested roads. So one way or the other, added population causes cost. Either you spend more money to keep public service quality constant, or you allow the public services to become more congested and the quality to deteriorate.
We are talking about Foxconn today and taking your calls. Meg from Montello, she wants to correct something that we said earlier. Meg, welcome to the program.
Good morning. I wanted to comment on the idea that Kimberly Clark is an old business. I have a problem with us giving money to Foxconn, setting this precedent, and then turning away businesses that have been in our state for such a long time. Kimberly Clark creates paper towels, toilet paper, baby wipes, feminine products, things that we're not ready to stop using at this point, regardless of whether they're good or bad for the environment. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm just talking about us being ready to no longer use those. So the idea that that's an old business that's going to go away, it doesn't fly. It really doesn't. So by not giving them money and giving Foxconn money, what are we saying to the businesses that are here in Wisconsin that have been with us for such a long, long time?
Meg, thank you for that. I'm really glad you called in. What do you say to that, Tim?
Well, I think it's true that Kimberly Clark will have multiplier effects as well. And you know, we don't know exactly what the future of technology. Who knows? Maybe flat-screen TVs 10 years from now will be made all with robots.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe there's no future to the Foxconn jobs. We don't know that. I mean, you know, the technology is developing. And, you know, it's also true that Kimberly Clark has multiplier effects as well. And I'd expect that there'll also be about two or three for every job. The additional one or two jobs are created locally, or if jobs go away, one or two additional jobs is destroyed. The reality is, though, the state can simply cannot afford to give a deal the size of Foxconn per job to every company in Wisconsin, or even every manufacturing company in Wisconsin, or even, you know, even if you decide to cut out all the small manufacturers, even every large manufacturing company in Wisconsin. You simply cannot afford to subsidize 30% of wages for any large proportion of the companies in your state. So if you're going to do that kind of thing, you have to be really, really targeted and have some very special reason for giving such a large subsidy. Oh. I simply don't see that in the case of Foxconn.
Okay, so if a state does want to incentivize business in its state, what's the best way to go about it?
I would be much more moderate in what I offer. I'd offer a deal that I could do consistently for all companies, and I would target as much as possible for high multiplier companies. In other words, if you have a choice between one with a multiplier of 4 and one with a multiplier of 2, choose the multiplier of 4. The other thing I would do is I pushed in the past that we need to look at our small and medium-sized business sector. Like Wisconsin has a very large base of small and medium-sized manufacturers. And what they need to expand is not subsidies so much, but in many cases they need job training for their workers. They need technical assistance with finding new markets. You know, we have things called manufacturing extension services that work in helping manufacturers find new markets, become more productive. And so, you know, frankly, I think a better investment would be, if we're going to have incentives, tightly target them on very high multiplier firms. Make sure the amount's moderate. Make sure it doesn't break the bank so that it undermines financing for public services. And then let's focus more on trying to boost our economy by helping, provide various kind of customized services like job training to small and medium-sized manufacturers. That I think, will have a higher bang for the buck than some of these large incentive deals.
One of the questions that I have about Foxconn is that we won't necessarily know whether this investment has paid off for another probably 25 years, which puts us into the 2040s, which it kind of freaks me out that 25 years from now is going to be in the 2040s. We have such a short-term memory. We only really pay attention to what's in front of us. So how will we know? Will there be benchmarks in place so that in 20 years, in 25 years, when things are going really well or things are tanking, we can turn around and say, yeah, this is because of Foxconn?
Well, I think that is a problem with these incentives. And one of the real issues with Foxconn, with many of these incentive deals, is the incentives are too long-term. In other words, essentially the incentives last for 15 years for Foxconn. Now, why do they last for 15 years? I think it's because, frankly, political leaders find it easier to give away their successor's tax base rather than their own.
Mm-hmm.
So giving away some taxes you might collect or giving away some subsidies 10 or 15 years from now is kind of politically attractive, because you're not going to have to deal with that. Another thing I would do is with some of these incentive deals, shorten the term of them. You know, make them no longer than 5 years, because then at least, you're not putting the burden of the incentives. Because basically, this is a contract with Foxconn. Wisconsin is contractually obligated to Foxconn as long as Foxconn creates a certain number of jobs, has a certain amount of capital investment. And so there's going to be some future government legislature who 12 years from now is going to be paying this amount of money, and they're not going to really have a choice. I mean, they have a contract. They're legally obligated to pay it. And, I think there's a problem in postponing the cost to your political successor. The incentives are all wrong politically.
We are talking about Foxconn, whether or not they are going to have 13,000 jobs, and where those jobs are going to come from, where the people to fill those jobs are going to come from. We've been talking to Tim Bartik. He is a senior economist at the W.E. Upjohn Institute for Employment Research. It is a nonprofit, nonpartisan organization in Kalamazoo, Michigan. Tim, thank you for being with us today.
Thank you for having me on.
I'm Carrie Kaufman. It's The Morning Show, and you are listening to the Ideas Network.